fourth meeting is called to order, and thank you for coming, public. We start with a pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First order of business is to approve the agenda.
So moved.
I'll second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Our second item is public comment. Does any of the public wish to comment?
No.
Or give us sage advice? Okay. The next item is a consent agenda, and that includes two regular meeting minutes and warrants.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Do I second?
Any further discussion on the consent agenda? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
The next is really the same thing as public comment. It's a recess for a public hearing. The difference about a public hearing is we record the individual comments on the budget as opposed to summarizing them and everybody gets to speak. So, is there anybody who would like to speak about the budget?
I'd like to wait until after I hear it first. If I can still do it.
We should be able to do that. After we get a briefing, and if you have any comments before we vote on it, we could probably do that. That's probably a reasonable request.
Okay.
Would you like a staff presentation on the budget?
And then do the public hearing?
As part of the public hearing, that makes sense. And then...
Okay, so do we want to move the budget up to be now, basically?
Well, yeah, this is the budget time, I think. And then we'll vote on whether you want to approve a budget when we reconvene back into a regular meeting.
Okay, so we'll do it in order here if we can. Okay, so why don't you do your thing? Amaze us.
On the website, many of you looked on the website, we proposed a budget not only in numbers, but in a budget narrative. And I'd like to just spend a couple minutes going over that. The proposed budget for Port Kingston is $1.5 million. And it represents an overall increase of about 5% and an overall increase in expenses of about 10%. So what staff is proposing is that we do a CPI increase to all mortgage of 2%. So we're looking for a 2% increase in mortgage, which would increase our open mortgage from 556 to 567 per foot. And it would increase our covered mortgage from 908 per foot to 926 per foot. So this will generate about $13,500 to offset marine expenses. That's the only increase we're proposing for Morgan, the flat 2% increase across the board. In addition, we're proposing to up the launch ramp fee to $7. It's been $5. If you use our launch ramp and park, it's $5, which is the same as we charge for just a car. And we're proposing to up that to $7 when you launch your boat. And that'll offset some of the expenses we've had this year on the launch ramp, repaving, restoring, and that kind of stuff. We will see a temporary decrease in seasonal monthly guest mortgage because as we phase in covered mortgage, we're going to relocate those covered mortgage people to our guest dock. So we're not able to rent out our guest dock for seasonal monthly mortgage. So we will see a decrease in revenues there. Also, as you know, we're in the process of starting the development of Washington Boulevard and Park, which is going to displace 24 parking spaces up in that area that Diamond Parking presently has. We will be reassigning monthly parking down in the port to try to offset that monetary loss. But there might be some disruption of service as we get rid of Diamond Parking and start working with Washington Boulevard Park. So our expenses are expected to rise from $1,423,000 to $1,489,000. What we're projecting is a 2% increase for all port staff. So putting in there a 2% raise throughout the year. We're also having a $5,000 fund for merit increases to be divided among the 10 employees. In addition, we're going to up our maintenance budget and our advertising budget by about $10,000 each. Medical and business insurance continues to rise, and as we try to encourage people to pay with credit card, our credit card fees are going up astronomically. It's still a good deal for us because our payment record is a lot better when we can get people to pay automatically, but we have those fees to take into account. This budget also represents a debt service payment of $7,000 per month for a proposed $1 million loan for our covered mortgage project. That is yet to be decided by the commission, but I thought when we're doing the budgeting, let's put in there $7,000 a month starting in March for debt service. We also, it's hard to believe, but 2017 is going to be another audit year, and that's going to be another $18,000 expense that we don't always have. So overall, our expenses are going up, and even with those increases, the report is still in a pretty strong financial position that we can pay for all of our services through fees and rates and still be able to take our non-income revenue, like taxes and interest, and we can put that into our capital fund. So that's a great thing to be able to put in $212,000 a year into our capital fund. So that's the budget in a nutshell. It's pretty pretty simple. I tried to, when I did the budget, lower it down to two pages. So it's two pages you'll see. Every category is there. And I did two columns for you to compare the 2017 proposed budget to the 2016 budget, so you can see where the differences are.
Jim, would you want to just touch on the highlights of the fee changes? Since that's a separate item from the budget, but I might want to touch on that now.
Well, a lot of the fees we have, we've traditionally been using these fees, but they haven't been codified by the commission, or at least the institutional knowledge of the court hasn't been able to find that they've been codified by the commission. So Samantha put together a list for you, a checklist of all of the new fees that we're using, but we want to make sure that are voted on and approved. And one is our transient mortgage rates. Obviously, we have 30, 40, and 50-foot slips in the transient dock, and sometimes a 40-foot boat wants to go into a 50-foot slip. We've been arbitrarily charging a minimum, for instance, if it's a 50-foot slip, and a 40-foot boat wants to go in, we say you've got to pay for at least 45 feet of that dock. So we're a little lenient with them. We don't charge them for the whole dock. So what we're wanting to do is codify in our rates all of the minimums. And you'll see on the rate sheet there, we isolated every rate, every dock, and what that's all about. The other thing that we find is very labor intensive is reservations. And we want to encourage people to make reservations, but it takes a lot of time. And traditionally, most ports do charge a reservation fee. So I'm proposing a $7 non-refundable reservation fee. So if we're going to go through the whole thing of reserving it, making it available, at least the port's going to get $7 out of it for our operating and what we have to do. The other thing I'm looking for is we haven't instituted a background check for liver boards. Most ports do a background check, and I was talking to the Port of Paulsbo the other day, and we were talking about how they implement their background checks. And it's not really a comprehensive background check as much as it is to make sure that we're not allowing felons to come and live in our marina. So it's really a felon check. And the other thing that's in there, that in your packet you'll see a draft policy that basically says if you owe the Port of Kingston money or any port district money, until that debt is settled, we're not going to give you liver board status. So again, we'll work with them, but that's kind of what we're doing. If he's got a low credit rating, we're not going to deny him because he has a low credit rating. So we are going to deny him on a felony charge or owing ports money for mortgage or skipping out. We talked about the parking, the truck and trailer parking is the next category. Port labor rate. We do a lot of work, whether it's towing boats, securing boats, helping people bring their boats out of the water. So we want to establish a rate for our people. If we're doing a service for somebody that's above and beyond the call of regular duty, we wanted to establish that port labor rate and port overtime rate. People being called in the middle of the night to do something, there'll be that overtime rate. Something that is near and dear to our hearts with this recent storm is we had a number of boats that were tied up with clothesline. And our staff literally spent hours down in the dock securing those boats. We went through every line we had in the shop to try to secure these boats. Many of our tenants are absentee tenants. They live in Hawaii, they live in Denver. And so the staff did a great job of securing every boat. We didn't have any losses at all. But what that allowed us to do is come up with what we call a policy that if staff believes that the boat is in danger of endangering another boat, we want the right to be able to put a line on that boat and charge the tenant for that. Of course, first we would call the tenant, say, there's a problem, there's a storm coming, you need to come and rectify this. But if they're non-responsive, we bought a case of half-inch lines, 25 feet long, that we can go and put on their boat. They cost us $12, and we're going to charge $25 for them to install them on the boat. Again, that's in a, an extreme thing. They're not going to just walk the docks and start replacing lines. Mm-hmm. It's something that the boat is a safety issue. Another issue that comes up all the time is bailing skiffs. If you walk the docks, you'll see a number of dinghies and skiffs that are half full of water, some of them almost sinking. And the tenants are non-responsive when we call, so we will offer a service, bail your skiff, we will charge your bill for doing the service.
Is that a service we offer, or is that one we're going to do it and charge them for?
Yes, we're going to do it and charge them for it. We don't really want to charge them. We would like them to come and tend to their boat, but some people again are non-responsive to those kinds of things.
What does the asterisk mean in that chart? So it says $50 per hour per employer, 2 hour minimum, asterisk, on page 40.
The notations of the asterisks are listed on the final page.
On the next page, thank you.
Rates,
thank
and
you.
A single asterisk indicates that rates are subject to applicable state sales tax or leasehold and excise tax.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm so glad she's here. Illegal garbage dumping fee, we've all seen it. We've all went to people and talked to them about bringing their truck loads of their household garbage and dumping it in our dumpsters. We put up signs last month, big signs, right at every step, and it's amazing how our dumpster use has declined. Just the threat of it, people are saying, oh, I can't dump it here anymore. So if nothing else, we want to establish a fee of $300 and really try to get people to not put their household trash in our dumpsters, because it is expensive for us.
This is a question for council. Mm-hmm. Do we have any jurisdiction to collect that fee if they're not a tenant?
And you collect it how? Or you impose it?
Well, if someone drives down here from, probably from Port Townsend to dump their trash. And we get a license plate or something, and we got this fee, can we collect it?
Do we use a small claims process or something if we had to?
Yeah.
Just was just wondering. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see our tenants, yeah, but mm-hmm. how do you build people that they're over there?
Yeah, I'm going to use it as a deterrent as much as anything. Mm-hmm. I think it will be a deterrent when people see it. BNP violations, we have a section in our policy manual with 4 BNPs, although Commissioner Elliott and I had a discussion today. We haven't really defined what a BMP is and what a BMP violation is. So I'm going to actually ask that we probably remove that fee from this fee schedule until we do a policy that outlines BMPs and what those BMPs are finable and what aren't finable.
May I preach to the choir here? You know, you read the BMPs, and it says the Marina Management encourages all vessel owners to adhere to these.
So the little voter would say, oh, friendly advice, not realizing there's a dry cackle in the background. If I catch you three times, I'm going to throw you out of the window. So we talk about enforcement in two other places in the plan, our regulations. We've got two separate reports. So this would be a third one. So Jim's staff is working on rewriting the rules and regulations. And I think we need enforcement to cover everything. And I think there needs to be a legal review of whatever our important policies are. So not saying I'm against it. I'm just saying that I think this should be part of a bigger project to update the plans. Because, you know, if I throw my Coke can in the non-recyclable thing, or I don't use up my paint on a board, Jim could be hanging me from the yard arm there, you know?
Or dump your coffee in the water.
Yeah. Or dump my coffee. So I think it needs some work. It's just, this is kind of a big thing to do in a budget, and Jim did a great job. I encourage him to keep our waters clean. I mean, Apple Tree Cove is really important to keep clean, so.
Yeah,
they did a great job. So.
If we're having the same issues addressed in two or three different documents, that's a recipe for disaster. So yeah, I think that's probably a good idea. I didn't realize we had that.
We've got penalties sprinkled all around in our rules and regulations, and it's probably time to. And one thing else, Commissioner Torch, at the all ports meeting, we were advised that all the ports got together and came up with marina rules to standardize them through Kitsap County and to try to get Kitsap County to enforce that. And the sheriff kind of poo-pooed it, didn't go anywhere. But they want to resurrect that, so I've asked for that to be sent to us, and we can look it over. Maybe the rewrite team can look at these rules, and this might be like finding the lost scripture or something like that. Dead Sea Scroll. I apologize to the listening audience. So anyway, there's a move afoot to do something that involves county, maybe.
So the last one is on our application for use of recreational facilities, but we haven't again found it where it was codified, and that's a cancellation fee. That if you're going to rent the stage or you're going to rent the tent, you cancel, you'll be charged a cancellation fee. So that's the last fee.
Did you want to mention the temporary tie-up fee?
So temporary tie-up fee. We have a lot of issues in the office scheduling 2 hours free. A lot of people come in, they'll think, oh boy, 2 hours free. They either won't sign up, they'll just leave their votes, or they'll sign up and 4 hours later we can't find them when we have a guest who has a reservation to use that slip. So we want to encourage some kind of a registration process and a small fee. So what we're recommending, and again, we pulled other ports, most people have a fee for up to 4 hours. It's $5 for boats under 25 feet and $10 for boats over 25 feet. Gives them 4 hours, they can go up to the restaurants, they can shop. It's a nominal fee, and it allows us to get them to be registered. So that's what we're proposing.
$5 under 25?
Mm-hmm. And $10 over. Yeah, we have 50-foot boats coming in and tying up for 4 hours and leaving. Say thank you very much.
There's a pretty stiff fee for parking at the fuel dock.
Yeah.
Is that because people abandon their boats at the fuel dock?
Well, it's illegal, too.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right on.
Well, it ties up the fuel dock to prevent us from selling fuel, too.
Yeah. I believe that fee was passed by resolution.
Yeah, I get it. I just didn't notice it because we didn't have this before.
I noticed this is a little off topic, but the tenant gate key cards, are we still in a process to replace all of those or reactivate all of them?
We're reactivating all of them. We've sent out postcards to every tenant. We've had a lot of response, people coming in and getting their cards reprogrammed. What we're going to do is December 1, I think it is. Is that right?
Yes.
Samantha, December 1. Everybody that's not come to register will get their gate key shut off. So they will obviously come up and register. There's no cost to do it. Mm-hmm. We just want to reprogram the computer. Because we upgraded our software, and we were having some issues where gates wouldn't open, restrooms wouldn't open. So this way we're going to know that everybody's registered has the right number in the computer for work.
And so these fees would apply there Although they would already have paid their deposit, presumably,
for
what they've got.
There's no new fees for this re-registration process.
But if someone has a third gate key,
five or six.
I mean, if they want to have three active gate keys.
We allow them to buy the third one. We strongly discourage any more than three to be active.
But I see you've got an additional gate key annual fee for $36.
Right.
That
That's
would
for
apply.
The third one.
Yes.
This
okay.
When is the deadline for getting those finished?
December 1.
Okay.
Well, is there any insightful comments from the audience, from the general public? We're still in here right now.
I'd like to wait just a little bit longer.
Okay. Well, just raise your hand whenever you're ready. I think you did a really great job. There's no, nobody here. There's no comments.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
Okay. So we are adjourning the public hearing subject to the promise made to Mr. Bagley. If he raises his hand, we'll both call on him. The next item is the financial report.
I don't see much of a difference from last month, but did note the insurance center that it did go up last month and it went up again a little bit more because of the expense. An extra $8,000 for September's expenses. Mm-hmm. The only thing that really jumped out at me, besides the capital project, which is the last page, or second to last page, they updated the expenses. Well, they're capital budget projects, but they are actually expenses because they're under the $5,000. So that's the two-way radios. They're way, way, way under budget, so that's good. Got 10 radios for just under $5,000. The fuel dock float that's completed. We did the gas dock and the fuel dock. And that one was over budget.
I noticed we had capital asset purchases for the month of $20,000. What else was in there that contributed to that?
That number, I could not understand why that was there. The $20,000 in capital assets.
The staff car, aren't you?
It's a new boat.
I was wondering if it
was
Washington Boulevard or.
What we transferred out was 18. 18,000, so it sounds like 20. So I don't know where they came up with the 20. I'll have to find that out.
Yeah, we need to get with Dennis. There's a couple of management tools that I would like them to create. Juanita and I talked about it today, where we can really track expenses for the year instead of month to month. Because so many expenses, for instance, insurance is a perfect example. Our accountant spreads insurance of $63,000 over 12 months. Well, we get a bill in March for $63,000. So it won't catch up for itself until December. So it doesn't give the commission a very good tool to say, well, where are we overall compared to our annual budget? So we're going to do a tool where we have the annual budget, the expenses from the accountant, and how much of that, and where we are in the year's budget. And on top of that form, we'll have the, you know, March is 30% into the year. So you'll know if you see expenses that are over 30% of that budget, we should be looking at those. We're going to try to create some tools that will give us a better picture than just these cash statements.
So we have this nine-month projection. This is the nine-month budget to date, mm-hmm. that table. But early on, that doesn't mean much because things are bouncing around,
yeah.
But they should steady out as we move forward. to December, we should get a warm feeling that we're on track, right?
I mean, fuel's a perfect example. You know, it says in here that we're down in fuel sales, but all of our bills are paid, and I have $70,000 worth of fuel in the tank, which is all going to be income now. So
I see.
It just varies so much. It's very hard to track the way they're tracking those numbers.
You really had me going there, because it said we got 62,000 year to date on fuel, and we were projecting 96. Then I looked in your budget, and you're saying next year we're going to get 111. I'm thinking, did you strike oil or property? Or why is it so much more next year than it is this year?
Well, remember, fuel is a commodity that changes price. I mean, last year, fuel was $1 a gallon more than it is this year. So when you're looking at the gallons we're selling and the dollar amount, it's really hard to pin down dollars. It's almost better to track it as gallons and percentage of margin per gallon. Mm-hmm. That would be a more fair comparison than average dollars.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that answered my big question. I was wondering about that. Is there any discussion on the budget or questions? The budget report. Not the annual report.
On the financial report.
On the financial report, yes.
No.
Move on to the next item, which is resolution to adopt the budget. And we have three resolutions. We have the budget adoption, we have the budget, capital budget, and the rate schedule, and then the levy increase. So let's talk about item A first, the budget.
I would like to note that this and the next resolution show me as the port attorney, which Carolyn and I tried to figure out if we had this opportunity to switch, would we?
I'm impressed. Two attorneys sitting next to each other.
So that probably needs to be re. I would like to globally comment, not on the budget per se, but on the narrative, what a really good tool I think that is, and what a nice job I think you all did on it.
That's
that.
Terrific. So. Better than any other ports, probably even better than Port Townsend.
I'm sure it is.
I mean, really,
that's because Juanita did it.
If I can understand it, then I think maybe the general public can understand it. You know. I did have one question for you. We're treating the debt service as an operating expense, but then we're going to have to contribute $400K. Does that come out as a capital expense out of our Marina Reserve Fund, or do we decide that later? Okay, because that would probably be a capital expense. Yeah, or else we're going to be hurting operationally.
One other thing on the treatment of the debt service, my expectation is that we will not draw $1 million on March 1 and start paying interest, but that rather we'll draw on that as we progress. So for a while we're going to be under, if we budget 7,000, we're going to be under that till we build up to 7,000. I don't know if it's worth trying to calculate out the, certainly not worth redoing the budget for, but just as a reporting tool when we go on, it might help us to see how the debt service is less than anticipated until we ramp up to that level.
And we're anticipating 3% here, but we have no idea what interest rates are going to be in March.
Yeah.
So this is. But if you notice, it's in there as an operating expense. But at the end of the day, operating income from operations is still in the positive, mm-hmm. including the 7,000.
Can we get the line of credit while the rates are at where they're at?
Yes.
So we don't have to wait until the Fed jacks it up.
So my proposal is to go out to bid this month And so we get numbers, so we know what we're dealing with. Now I'd like to come to the commission, and as soon as you guys want to pull the trigger on how you would like to finance that project, knowing what the project's going to cost, that we can do it now.
So basically get something we can draw upon when we get cracking there. I really think it's a great idea, because I think rates are going to go up.
Yeah, does the $1 million that you've sort of tentatively flagged for our debt on that, does that include loan fees and the costs?
Yeah, I want to go out for a real RFP from the banks. I haven't done that yet. I've talked to all three local banks, but we want to get documents from them, all the conditions, prepayment penalties, and other things.
Mm-hmm. Who are the three local banks that you've talked to?
Kitsap, Columbia, and
Liberty Bank.
Liberty.
Okay. So we basically decide that based on the rate they offer.
I have one other question about employee and commissioner medical. One went up, one went down. I don't understand.
Yeah, you're going to have to ask Juanita that one because she's a medical person.
Well, the 2016, that was what was budgeted this year. And with researching everything, Nancy actually got a different kind of insurance for all the commissioners. I'm going to look into it again, though, because I know we wanted more medical. Fit you for full, right?
Yeah, I understood. that the commissioners had full medical coverage, and then that went away because the insurance agency changed it, but that there was the intention to try to reinstate some sort of medical coverage for commissioners for 2017. That's what I understood was happening. Okay. Okay. If that's...
Our age didn't come into the equation, did it?
I think it was actual time worked that issue.
You know, with me, I've got Medicare, and then I got my TRICARE. So you're kind of like the third insured. You know, so I think maybe we can use that somehow for my case. I don't know who else has supplemental coverage, but I can talk to you about that later.
One of the things that I did learn in kicking some of this around, and this is not legal advice, but as I understand it, if you have Medicare, which some of us older members do, that is and then your employer offers medical insurance coverage, the Medicare is automatically the second instead of the primary.
Oh,
so
really?
The savings that you might expect from saying, well, I have Medicare, my employee coverage should be less, is not there.
Hmm. Oh, so it doesn't pick up Part B.
That becomes the secondary insurer, as if you had two parents with different insurance, and both of them covering the child.
Interesting, okay.
Interesting, yeah, because I also have the government stuff. Mm-hmm. They're all fighting to be second insured.
Well, they'll take third. It's one time when they do want to finish third, if that's an option.
Well, if there's any way we can let it help that way, let us know. Let me know.
Yeah, I know Juanita's working on this.
Is your hand up, Tom? Or are you just scratching your ear?
No, no, credit. Okay.
Okay, is there any more discussion of item A, the basic budget?
Nope.
Motion?
I move that we adopt the 2017 operating budget as presented.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
For the record, that's resolution number 10-01-2016.
Correct.
Okay. The next is the capital budget. It's a little shorty.
Yeah, the capital budget, because we've changed our operating budget to be anything over $5,000 is capitalized with an expected life of up to 5 years. So those are the two things, $5,000, 5 years life. The capital budget is small, but there's some big projects here. One is obviously the covered mortgage repair. I'm thinking it's going to be 1.35 million. That's kind of my stab at a guess. Gates and dock entrances, we haven't really designed those yet, but we really think that's going to be about $70,000. The port office remodel and expansion, about $170,000 based on the architect's numbers. Obviously, we have matching funds for our curb feasibility study. I think that's going to actually happen in January. I don't think it's going to happen this year where we're going to have to put out a matching fund. So it's going to be either late fourth quarter or early first quarter.
Is that a reimbursement grant or?
It is a reimbursement grant.
So we'll have to, yeah.
And then repair of the fuel lines. We did all our pressure tests and everything this year. I kind of briefed you. From the manifold on the fuel dock to the pumps, those all need to be replaced with triple wall pipe to get it up to code. And it's not a very far run, but it's very expensive, $15,000 to go 100 feet. For a total of $1.617 million.
Does this show, this assumes that all of the mobile park expenses are in this year?
Pardon me?
That the park expenses are all in this year?
No, the park expenses I actually took out of the capital budget. We had an internal discussion. I may be right, maybe wrong. But since that's all covered with grant money, I hate to bring the income in like we did this year and then expend it out. I would rather just do that with a grant because we're not going to expend any port money
okay.
on that.
We've already made our contribution.
Right.
So, we're going to keep the electronic entry key system with the new gates.
We're also going to put keypads next to them. Our new system will allow us to issue key codes that'll last for a specific point of time, almost like a hotel thing. And the reason we want to put key codes on the gates is if we're using some of the gated keys or gated slips for transient mooring. They can't get in and out without a key card. I would rather give them a code for 2 days that expires than to issue them a key card. So there'll be a regular reader and a keypad right next to it.
We have one like we have now on the heads.
On the heads, yeah. Only there. The heads don't work very well.
So on the fuel line, just give me a warm fuzzy that when they changed the standards for overwater fuel systems, checked ourselves, which was like 2012 or 2013 or something. Not that long ago. We've checked ourselves to make sure there's not more work to be done there.
We had Pacific Environmental come out and do a full assessment of the entire system, and they're the best there is in the state. So, and they identified that from the manifold out is a real problem that needs to be addressed.
And we're covering everything.
Everything was
so we're up to
all the way to
those
tanks.
New rules.
Yeah.
And Jim, sometime in the last couple of months, you presented concerning the ladders, and I wondered, is that a small number or what's
so
the
what
next
happened
step?
Is we realized at the PCC meeting that the reason the ladders don't work is because we've installed them wrong. So we have been in contact with the distributor. They are going to provide us with the wedges that will make them fit right and not go under the dock, but actually go out. There is going to be a small cost, but it's going to be an operating cost. It's not going to be a capital cost. It may be $1,000 or $2 to get all the wedges in place so we can remount the ladders we have.
Isn't it nice to have a nice ending?
Happy endings. Okay, great when you're talking budgets.
Really.
Okay. Is there any more discussion of the capital budget items? Would your hand go up, Tom? No.
You're bad as an auctioneer.
Okay.
It will be coming up.
Okay. Is there a motion to adopt the capital budget?
So moved.
A second.
Any more discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
For the record, that's resolution 10-02-2016.
Which will be rewritten to show Carolyn as the attorney, correct?
Yeah.
And you as a commissioner.
She wins.
Okay. Okay, the next one is a motion to adopt the rate schedule as amended by Jim to defer the clamping down on those environmental
the BMP stuff.
Yeah. So that would be those items in that rate schedule, which appear on the second page, third page. So it's violation of mortgage restriction. So the fuel dump. Right after that, there's illegal garbage dumping, and then there's three BMPs that would be not be part of this. Right. Okay.
So this go ahead. Very cool looking chart, Commissioner Pohl. To a what are we doing with that?
So Commissioner Elliott asked that we actually vote on every new rate increase. This is for transparency, so the public knows what has been, what's new, and what's been an older thing. So Samantha created this checklist so we can go down and make sure we're in check.
Cool.
So we can do this with one motion. We don't have to. Mm-hmm. This is just some self-discipline to show all. Open kimono, port me. Right.
Shall I add that to the records?
No, but that we have the option to vote individually, but we mm-hmm. may choose to.
Yeah. I have a question on the liveaboard background fee. I'm assuming anyone who is already a liveaboard in the port would not be subject to a background fee.
This is new people coming in. We have a policy in place already that you can't be a liveaboard unless you're a permanent tenant. So we're going to have some pretty good background on those people as permanent tenants, people who are given that status. But it is a $25 fee to go through our processing, and that just protects everybody.
Yeah, and we don't do any kind of a check on people who just want to come in and be a permanent tenant.
This resolution includes the policy, is that correct?
Well, this is a draft policy. I wanted to show you what we would propose. If you'd like to change that policy, we can. So we're two different things, but I think it's a pretty good policy.
So would we voting? Are we voting on that?
We can, but it would be a separate vote.
Well, the only question is, has it had legal review?
It has not had legal review.
Oh, legal review of our background check policy. So I think that should happen. I agree with everything you put in there, but
we can defer that to the next meeting. So that's not an issue right now.
And to clarify, the resolution itself does not state the adoption of the additional policy terms for that report policy. It covers the adoption of the commissioner's rate schedule.
And I presume this is going to be embedded as part of the rules and regulations.
Yeah, I guess that's what it's going to be. Something like that. Well, we're doing this whole rewrite, so yeah. Who knows where it'll land. Okay. Getting a gimme live from there. Is there any more discussion on rates?
I wanted to clarify what you said when we were talking about the BMP violations being not included here. And you mentioned two others. One was...
I mentioned that in our rules and regulations, we have two separate paragraphs on enforcement. And then we have other penalties scattered in the verbiage. And it seemed to me that we should get bundle all back together and have one... That's what I meant. One paragraph on enforcement and how it works and how you appeal things and all that sort of stuff.
Okay.
What groveling you have to do.
So this is the only piece that's not included, is that
those
BMP?
Three lines.
Got it.
Although I still probably will send a written warning to people if they're painting over the water, it shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. That's not a fee.
Just give them a little shove.
Yeah.
Nope, didn't say that. No, I think it's important for you to encourage people to do the right thing. And you know, we've got some situations on the dock where we got to...
It makes a good record for your compliance to your protocol.
non-metered flat rates, we're not reading the meters on them.
Well, we have monthly guests that are on the linear and the guest docks, and they don't have meters on them.
Okay.
So if you have a 40-foot building and the transit slip during the winter, you would pay a flat fee.
So the liveaboard is the winter mortgage people, isn't it? And transient?
Well, liveaboard can be all year.
So they can be on a transient dock all year?
No.
Because it said non-metered. Do we have non-metered liveaboards other than transient?
We could on the guest dock.
Yeah, so we can. So if somebody wants a such a good time in the winter and they want to stay over, because I thought we'd kick them all out in the spring.
We do, in June. Yeah.
But during the winter, say like Nancy and her husband lived on the transient dock, they would pay this rate.
So they're using 1,000 kilowatt per month, which isn't that, that's not that much for if you're running a heater. It's probably less than, they're probably using 1,400 or more for that. It's a good deal. Just staying toasty in the winter.
Question on the recreational facilities. If I'm reading this right, up to 30 days prior to the event, you cancel and you pay a $20 fee. What if you canceled, less than 30 days prior to the event?
You relinquish your $200 deposit.
The $200 deposit, the security deposit is covered by that. Okay.
That is correct.
Do you want to take each of these on the commissioner poll to approve the rates, take each one of those one at a time? And
this will provide us the opportunity, but I don't think we need to do that.
Okay.
Unless the board wants to vote separately. But it does provide the option if there's one of those the fees that you want a separate vote on, kind of like the warrants. You could always vote on warrants separately, but we usually don't.
I'll move that we adopt the new rates as proposed in the 2017 rate schedule, except for the BMP violation rate, which has been removed.
And I second that motion.
Is there any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
High stepping along here. We have the commissioner's rate schedule done. The next resolution is the tax levy increase. Do you want to make any comments on that?
Juanita and I went back and forth today, and there's a form in your packet from the Department of Revenue, and it's the scariest form I've ever seen in my life. It doesn't make any sense, but I'm assured by the county that this represents a 1% tax increase plus new construction.
I was going to ask you about that.
And the only way you know that is if you look at that number on the back. It goes from 191 to 195. But it's tough reading.
Yeah.
So that's 1% on the current tax base, and then
new construction
was icing on the cake.
But the dollar amount of the actual levy amount only increases by about a third of a percent.
No, that's for that's where it gets screwy. So if you compare this 191 number here, which is what we're taking this year.
Okay.
The back page, it says 195,468. That's where you're going to get your 1% plus new construction. This 0.3375%.
It's from previous years, so and it took me a while to figure out how to call the assessor and ask. So the estimated levy from the previous year. Subtract that from the actual, which is the 191, gives you the 647, and that equals out to the percentage of 1.237.
Say that last again. That
yeah, I had to think about it and ask a few more questions. I had to, understand it myself. So the last year's estimated minus last year's actual comes to 647.
Okay.
And the percentage of the difference is 0.3375. This is just last year's.
And they track that because?
We set a budget asking a certain amount of dollars, and that's 1%. However, the actual taxes collected may differ from that.
Yes.
Because of home buildings, homes burning down, maybe ours, you never know when you pass something on. So there's a delta between the 1% that we ask for and what we actually get because of the tax rates established in the first of the year, and then that's what you get, whatever that assessment is, right?
Right.
So it may not be exactly, you know, build out Arborwood, we can get a ton of money, I suppose.
We also have cancellations and a refund that is calculated out of the actual, either way, it's 1%.
Yeah.
Fine, bottom line is 1%.
So should you choose to take 1% plus new construction, this is the form we would file with the Department of Revenue.
Well, then I'll move that we adopt ordinance resolution number 1004-2016 for the 1% levy increase.
I second that.
Is there any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Now we're in old business. We have a public records policy. You're welcome to copy of.
So I distributed this policy again for the third time. We're trying to track and make all the changes that everybody wants to make. I apologize to Commissioner Elliott, I didn't get incorporate all of his changes. So again, I'm not 100% sure we're ready for adoption on this. Some of the changes could take some rewrite that we're going to need to pass through everyone. We do have a public records policy in place. It's not very good. This is much better. Gone through two attorneys, but we all have to agree that this is the policy we want to put forward. So.
I think this is a work in progress, but we should put a line in the sand tonight. We should say this is it, and we're going to try to make it better in the future, but let's just, you know, take advantage of all the work that you and Carol and others have put into that, and we can keep polishing this cannonball until it gleams, you know. I don't know.
I'm wondering if we adopted this tonight, if we could then wait 6 months and get some experience with new requests,
or not. Thank you.
Right, and see what happens, and then 6 months from now, come back and make additions that seem appropriate. Would that be satisfactory?
I think so, but I think there's some things that he should think about.
Okay.
Maybe in the interim. And let me just say, I'll give you an example. It says that the PRO or their designee. So that's got to be more than, hey, Sam, can you cover the PRRs for us while we're out of the office? It needs to be something written down, and then the PRO needs to give that person training. So, but those things don't have to be in the policy. That can just happen.
Right.
You know, you can just do most of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some things, if they make sense, we should do them. But I agree with you, we don't have to change the policy. Okay?
Yeah, I think it's important to get one in place, but also to keep an eye on how does it work once we've put it, you know, down and start implementing it. And if we find things that do need to be addressed, we can, you know, keep polishing it, as you say.
Yeah.
But I agree. It's important that we get this improved policy in place and start, you know, marching forward.
I'd like to actually distribute Walt's comments.
Uh-oh.
Because, no, I think they're good comments, and I'm going to need your help to figure out how to incorporate some of this stuff.
We're not saying that'll hold anything up.
No,
it's just kind
no,
of.
This is just for discussion, yeah, for further reference.
I think I was on my second Dark and Stormy when I wrote these things. But anyway. But, you know, some of it's, you know, just whatever. But I don't think we need to bog anything down here. I think we should move along, stepping high and smartly, and get on with business.
Well, in light of those comments, I move the adoption of Resolution 1005-2016 to adopt the amended public records policy. I don't know if our policies require a reading of that resolution, but I think we've all read it.
Yes. Reading, you mean we swear that we've read the policy?
No, I meant the resolution.
Oh, I don't know. Well, I'm hearing from council.
No. Okay. No. Good.
Good. Is there a second?
I second.
Any more discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay. Thanks for all your hard work on this. I know it's been a long slog. Okay. The next item is our executive director.
Can I ask one question about your, of the things on here? Requester's name, telephone number, address, in the past one or more has wanted to remain anonymous, should not preclude filing a request. Is there any legal issue around anonymity for a PRR request? Okay.
We have had people ask to remain anonymous.
And they're
process.
Allowed to do that. But I think the way the policy is written, it could be, my name is anonymous, and here's how you contact me.
It's just
which would satisfy.
Yeah. It's just thoughts, you know. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure I understood what the issue was there.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Are we ready to move on?
I am ready to move on.
Smart. Okay, Jim. Floor is yours.
Well, you know, October's been a pretty busy month with three conferences and budgeting. Thank you for approving the budget. It's a big thing off the three of our backs. So we have another budget, or meeting, another conference tomorrow. The NMTA starts tomorrow, and I'll be there, and I think Walt will be there, and Mary's going. So that's going to be a good conference in Bremerton. We're also using this to develop staff. Ray and Austin went to the last one. Ray's going tomorrow. So we're trying to develop staff to get a handle on bigger role of the port community and how they fit within the port community. So that's great. Covered moorage, we're in the final permitting phase for covered moorage. I didn't hear anything back from the commissioners, from the PN&D presentation, so we're putting those plans forward. Obviously, we can make changes when we get to the construction phase, but we will be in permitting with those 95% drawings. Going to go to bid, open to bid, first week in November, and so that's pretty exciting. Hill House Rental staff.
Are there any unresolved issues from a construction engineering standpoint on this? Everything is.
Like I said, PN&D did a great job. They were really a pleasure to work with, and they addressed every one of your concerns and my concerns and Bob's concerns, which were really tough ones.
And the fire thing is all resolved.
Fire is all resolved. Okay. So this should fly through permitting, I would think. Hill House Rental, staff has done a great job. It is rewired to code. The plumbing fixtures have been fixed. We're bringing in a cleaning service next week to clean the whole house. Signs are going up November 1 for rental, and hope to have it ready December 1. So that's the plan on the Hill House.
A quick question on that. Have the Christmas decorations, they were doing those over at the Hill House for a while. Are they all through with that, with building them now, or how's that supposed
to? They will be by the 1st of December. No, okay. They're still in there right now. But Ray wants to move them into the yacht club. He's talked to the yacht club, and they're open to let the ladies go in there and actually do Christmas lights in the yacht club in the morning.
When do we turn the lights on?
3rd. December 3rd.
Yeah, so we should pretty much be done by that.
Office building project, I think I showed each one of you the elevation drawings that Scott did. We have a pre-app meeting with the county on November 3rd to figure out what hoops we're going to have to jump through. Obviously, this building is in the shoreline, so we need a substantial shoreline development permit. So Much to Juanita's chagrin, I told her to schedule the office building rebuild in September of next year because I think we won't, I don't think we'll get permits before September for doing any work there.
We talked about maybe doing some modernization of the laundry and shower bathroom. Not a big deal, but to kind of at the same time, but maybe not the same. But we should look at that maybe being, if it's compatible. Yeah. We obviously have to do something about those windows that are in the office and flushing toilets and all that stuff.
Yeah. Washington Boulevard Park, we've had a great meeting with Cole Medina and the property donor this week, reviewed the park drawings, and they are both on board with the drawings. I think we had an interesting dialogue about the donor's wishes to have a something iconic in the park. And we talked about where that should be, and we really talked about it really probably should be at the other end of the park, where you get off the ferry. That's where people are going to see it. And the donor really likes the concept of a totem of some kind, and not a garish totem, but something that's symbolic of Kingston. The great news is the donor said that they would be willing to actually help fund that iconic thing. So
that's outside the grand boundary.
Yeah. So anyway, it was a great meeting. So that went well.
And I did hear from Cole Medina on a side conversation, him saying that they were very, very happy.
Good.
I remember the donor at one time wanted to recognize a parent going somewhere in the park, which I would think would be more appropriate in towards town, because it's not big, it's smaller, but yeah. I hope we continue to make sure that that's open to them if they wish for us to recognize.
Absolutely. Well, now that we've got the dialogue open, I think it's going to be a lot better as we start construction of that park, work together.
So if you say a totem, are you going to approach the tribes?
Yeah, I was thinking of the guy that did the, again, I go back to the Heritage Park building. And the thing that impressed me about the guy that did the artwork on the side of the building is he works with both tribes, and both tribes really like the way he works. And he may have a way to bring both tribes together in some kind of iconic statue that would celebrate both.
Yeah, that's one of the issues that I know came up in the planning. I don't think it got, in the initial plan, I don't think it got a lot of play, but it was pointed out that we have more than one tribe here, and their totem identifications may not be the same, and so we would want to make sure that we...
Maybe there's two totems.
Could be.
And they may want to contribute. The hotel grounds has a totem park in it, mm-hmm. with the one they're opening up.
Well, it's interesting. We had a great discussion about the hotel, and one of the iconic things they put up are the paddles. The three mm-hmm. paddles are up now, mm-hmm. and the paddles, you know, represent welcome. Mm-hmm. And that could be something that we could do that would satisfy both tribes. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we're gonna work on that. We've got some time, but it was great to open that dialogue.
So Adirondack chair is out.
No, still might do that. Still might do that.
Okay.
Kingston Express is in Fort Townsend. It is on the hard, and poor staff experienced a bit of technical difficulty getting to Port Townsend. The generator went out, the stabilizers went out. It doesn't sound bad. I said, well, so what? The generator went out. They said, well, we don't have steering. All the steering is controlled by the generator. They had no steering. They had no stabilizer.
So we have two generators?
We did. They had to rewire it, though, to get the second generator.
Really? So they were just fire the second generator up? That's interesting.
Anyway, it was an interesting study. But it's there safe and sound. We had a meeting today, we pulled it out of the water, and I'd like the commission to consider, we don't have to do it today, leaving the boat on the hard for 3 months. We're redoing the bottom, we're putting new zincs on, we're cleaning the props, we're painting it, and Steve Hyman and I looked at it and said, do we really want to put it back in the water, have it beat up over the winter, a prospective buyer? So we're looking at a new broker. He believes he's going to move this boat in 90 days. He thinks this is the best time to sell if we can settle on a price that's realistic. I'd like to recommend you to consider leaving it up there for 3 months, and if it doesn't sell, then bring it back. But that way, if we get a buyer, we would have to take it back to Port Townsend to get surveyed. And that's quite an adventure. More of an adventure than I thought it was going to be.
How expensive is leaving it up there for 3 months?
There. It's $3,000 a month. So we're talking almost $10,000. So it is expensive, but it's safe, secure, and might be a good investment.
How much does it cost to get it up there and get it put on the hard for a survey if we needed to do that, say, in February?
The prospective buyer would pay for the survey and everything, so that's not an expense.
Okay.
It's getting it there. I mean, the haul out was, $2,400. And Steve Hyman's great because he's still on the payroll, so he just makes his $20 an hour. It's pretty simple. It's more the wear and tear on the boat on the dock. You can see where the boat was on the dock. The entire side is dented. It just gets hammered on the dock. So
that's on the side of the Verlaine?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just the generator, was that the one that we had recently replaced at the fair?
I don't know. They rewired it. Steve was able to rewire it in the middle of Port Townsend Bay and get it started.
While you're ripping across.
I'm just kind of wondering if the new one died or is it the old one? It just also reaching end of life or something.
I don't know that. And just for your information, the broker did get back to me. He believes that $3,995 is the right price for that boat. He would like it to stay just under $400,000. We have it listed for $450,000 with the old broker. Haven't gotten any action at $450,000.
I still have this fantasy that it could be a backup boat if ballot measure passes, because it would take them a half an hour or more to get a boat from Bremerton up here.
Yeah.
And if this boat is here and we can continue to own it, if they pay the operating costs from FTA, that might be a low-cost way of dealing with it. Because people talk about, they're worried about the boat reliability. Well, if they can say, well, we've got a boat here that can run, it won't get you there quite as fast, but it'll get you there. But that's, I think it's a powerful argument. That's why we had the boat. So I don't want to, but we'll know.
We'll know
by our next meeting. But I think we should pursue that if we can.
Okay. That's all I have.
What about a fisherman?
Yeah.
Are you going to pursue a fish transfer fee in the foreseeable future?
We are. I think it's really important that we meet with the tribes and their tribal fisheries and really talk this through before we impose that fee. So that's on my radar now that this is adopted. That will be the next thing.
As a minimum, we should get the vehicle staging coherent, because they park in yellow 15-minute zones. They need the engine running. You know, we're going to be, if we let them get away with it, how can we enforce it for anyone else? And I'm kind of concerned that we follow our own rules there or make new rules. When you're making up your rules to deal with the fishermen, they can do anything they want. We don't care, whatever it is. But we should, even if we don't do it, we should still address the issue with the tribal elders or whoever you talk to. Any accolades or cheers for the executive director?
Adrian?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. I think we're getting to the commissioner's report.
So do you want to go first?
Oh, all right. I'd report on the small port conference, except we were all there.
Yeah.
I did think it was a very good program, though, and I did some follow-up with Linda, what's her name, from Port of Pasco, who did one of the presentations. Anyway, I did some follow-up with her, Linda O'Brien, on their financial policies and their return on investment calculations. And she sent me some materials that I passed on to Jim. Some of it is, particularly their policies, are not directly applicable in terms of language, but in terms of issues for us to spot that we need to consider putting in our own financial policies. So Jim will have that at the point where we get to working on that project again. We can kind of review those.
And I think we want to also address the issue of how we manage our cash reserves. We've talked about that a little bit, but as we have to start taking money out for the covered mortgage, 400K and things like that, we should have that what is that $2 million for that we got in cash reserves?
Well, that's all that I have for report.
Well, I too was at the same one we were all at, and Carolyn wasn't even there. But I learned a tremendous amount this month so far, and I am really interested in the material from the PCC conference that was kind of, we talked about developing kind of a do's and don'ts and check us off on all the things that are taken care of. I was delighted to see the Port of Kingston staff there, and I was fascinated to go over the material concerning emergency communications and who's in charge, who's on first in challenging situations. So that was very useful for me. And I won't go back over everything I liked about the small port seminar. There was much, much wonderful about that. A couple of other things that have been going on that I'm aware of right now. I did meet with Patty Graf Hoke from Visit Kitsap, and have been in conversation with Nancy Langwith concerning North Kitsap Tourism Coalition. And I think there's some effort to try to bring some of the everyone doing good for Kingston onto the same page, so at least we have maybe consistent branding. I'm not trying to have dual brands and some of that kind of stuff. So I am hopeful that some good can come out of this, and I also wanted to comment that North Kitsap Tourism is doing some very specific work concerning a lodging promotion during December. And I only think this has got value because tourism is now on the list of things that ports are authorized to care about. But I think it is really important when we talk about, as I've started thinking about, the many economic development voices in Kingston and the fact that we're going to wade in to the middle of that conversation and whatever that role looks like going forward beyond the curb grant. I think I'm wanting to become aware of what the many different voices are saying. So those were the things I wanted to just comment on. I received a request this morning from Waterman Mitigation Partners, I think Steve Seago's group, and asking if they can use my quote that was in the document the Port of Kingston sent and a week or two. And I don't think there's any problem as long as it's not the port. And I went back and reread the press release, which I think got included in the minutes somehow. So I just want to let you know that happened. I didn't know if either of you had also been approached.
I didn't know anything about.
Okay.
What are we talking about?
That's fine.
We were going to do a press release about the endorsement of the passenger ferry, and rightfully so, we're told we can't do that legally.
But individually.
Individually you can, and I just sent transcripts from our public meeting to them, and they can use the transcripts anywhere they want.
Okay.
And I was contacted by the Kitsap Sun regarding the status of the commission's endorsement on that. So I did give, a very nonpartisan answer, yes.
And there'll be a page turner of a column in the community news coming out
just before the election.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know when they'll release it, but typically it's...
Well, I really appreciated the thoroughness of your report and reasoning on that, Carol, and it made it, it was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And so I appreciated it.
Okay. Well, you were pretty much at the same conference as I was at. I got there on the first day of PCC,
mm-hmm.
and they will, I don't know, I don't think they have this order, but I would like them to come and do a table talk with us on how we respond to this bill to see that we are in sync with that. And I don't mean the ferries, but just, they offered to do it. We've got the contact information. You may have the notes on that. Something that impressed me, I think, is PCC has modular online training that our staff can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I offered to evaluate it to the training committee. I was watching the game at the bar, and they had a meeting, but their people didn't show up. So the guy, their chairs, says, what do you think about training? So I agreed to look at the training module. But I think that's something we might want to get the staff to check out and see. And they also have some manuals like Marine Electrical, which I think can be a pretty technical subject. For example, there's checking whether the boats are leaking AC, and not so much in salt water, but DC. And then there was the issue of cathodic protection for the steel tube pilings, and how do you do that? So there's some, I think that'd be very helpful. Maybe you want to get some of that. And they also said that there's a marina management manual they put out. I think it has everything you need to, might be very helpful to you. It even gives you the forms you use. So let's see, that was that. There is that if AMI becomes an affiliate, they have a computer model that can tell the economic benefit to the community for having the marina here. So it's probably pretty sophisticated. I know we surveyed our tenants at one, we got some information from tenants, but that's economic development. Actually, I think the visitor's dock is a tourism attraction myself. And all ports, we just had a bunch of stuff there. Did you send that out to the other commissioners? Yeah, so if you have any questions about that stuff, I didn't say which ports were doing what, and I'll try to dig that stuff out. But the one thing that I mentioned earlier was there is this draft marina regulations and policies that they would like to, might be very helpful to us, and they want to resurrect some. That's kind of it. One thing interesting I thought was of the cameras, and this was both at all ports and then at the PCC conference, because I was asking people, resolution isn't all that important. Important is to have coverage. You're not going to get anything that can be used in court out of these cameras, but you will get information on what's happening at your port and something that might help investigators. So it turns out that the spec you get for resolution isn't really the way it is.
It's at 60 feet.
It's in clear weather, no rain, not at night, and invariably you're trying to look at night when the light flash from the marina lighting is obliterating all that stuff. So that's just some advice you can probably get to involve in the camera. So when we look at cameras, I kind of think we should be looking at, are we looking at all the spaces we should look at? And that's where our money should go, as opposed to, we want state of the art, we want to count the hairs on the head of our guest here. Okay, that's about it for that. Okay, Town Commission report. Any staff comments?
Here's our update for September. The cost of county. I didn't add the boat launch because I was waiting to see if we were going to approve the rates. So I'll just start that when we start up again in January.
Can you provide us a definition of
what
each category is? Just say what it includes.
Coming.
Oh, it is.
It's
online.
Sorry.
Cool.
Sorry. She's four steps ahead of me, too.
Okay.
the cost of wages went down because Marvin left for the month of September. So Marvin is now back to help with the Christmas lights. And Gary's working that also.
So the Christmas lights come under park?
They're in under Marina.
That's not the definition. It says expenses to docks, but it's over water. The Christmas lights are a public.
I haven't done the Christmas light yet. Just
yeah, that's what I meant. The Christmas lights, is that admin? I was wondering, is that admin or is that
no,
park?
No, Christmas lights.
Park.
Admin.
It should be park.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we ought to split up the restrooms. I think the restroom at the far end ought to be a launch ramp expense. I think the one in the middle ought to be a park expense. And the one that at the far end should be a marine expense because it's key guarded. But I think the utilization of those restrooms are primarily far end is by launch ramp users, and the middle one is by people at the concert and you know all that sort of stuff. So I think the restrooms should be divvied up that way.
I think administratively that's going to be very difficult. If a guy is cleaning one restroom and goes to the next and goes to the next, it's going to be 16 minutes in one and 72 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to be another. One of the things I don't want this to be is so scaled down that our guys are spending time on a minutely basis what they're doing.
Divide by three, I can do that. Hey,
yeah.
Commissioner, I can divide by three. But I think, you know, you don't have to go by the minute. It should be your best guess. How much time do you spend on restrooms? And then you say, okay, divide by three. But if we get to, like, replacing toilets and things like that, then I really think that the restroom by the launch ramp very much serves those launch ramp users.
That's a marina function.
Yeah, it has a key code. Well,
I mean that's
no. I meant the one at the far end, where the one that's right at the launch ramp.
Right. That's essentially a marina function. The launch ramp is essentially a marina function.
I think the launch ramp should be its own cost center, because we have expenses associated with that launch ramp. So I believe that is a separate item from a marine expense. So I would like to see the launch ramp track separately, because we have expenses associated with that are independent of what the slip users are using.
Yeah,
I'm not here to debate it, but
yeah,
I think
point.
That was
it seems to me that's more of a subcategory of if we want to track that, because we are charging for that and we'd had the repairs and things on it. But it's still boat use of the marina, and those people may launch, come around and fuel up, go tie up for a couple hours when they come back in.
You're the lawyer, but I don't believe a slip owner,
not anymore,
a slip owner or a slip user uses a launch ramp. But, you know, a slip user doesn't use that launch ramp.
But
what the fishermen do, and if we're trying to establish a basis of what that launch ramp costs us and what fees we recover it from it, and then fish transfers that go through that, I think it should be a cost center. And I mean, you can.
Yeah, but that's a separate issue from do we break the restrooms into three categories and try to allocate
okay.
the cost?
Staff can sit there and count the people in the restroom, but I would offer for that restroom in the center, the usage is primarily park users. Very much so. Of course, the liveaboards go up there to do that, but I see that as a public service because we don't key card it; we have it open all the time, 24/7. So I think it's a public service.
So what does that give us, that information? If we have the launch ramp separate, a separate number for that. I'm trying to figure out how we use that information.
Well, I don't think the marina slip holders should be paying a higher fee because we have incurred more capital costs associated with the launch ramp. That's one. Two, it helps us identify why we need to collect the fee for the launch ramp. And then also the commercial transactions that occur at the launch ramps. That's almost a business. If we ever get into the fish transfer fee, we may need to establish policies that allow them to run their generators off the power poles, pedestals out there, because it's less polluting and it's more efficient. We may need to have more space so they don't have to park in the 15-minute zone. So I see that almost as a business center, a growing business center. A lot of cash goes through that launch ramp, and I think we should treat that as like a marine commercial marine facility as opposed to a recreational facility.
That's going to require, though, then breaking out the parking lot slots.
Yes.
Because if it's truck and trailer parked in there, it's launch ramp business rather than parking business.
I know you're a good lawyer. Let's be reasonable about this. We're not trying to talk about, we can figure that out.
That's my point.
I think we can figure that out. Okay. Now, if you don't want to do it, fine, but I want to go on the record that I feel the launch ramp is its own business center. We should track that separately.
Yeah, I don't care. I mean, I don't mind that. I just want to make sure globally that we don't try to track everything that our staff does, because they run all over the place.
Yeah.
They have to start keeping down to the minute.
It's going to be a good estimate.
Why is tracking the launch ramp tracking things to every minute? I don't get that.
Well, because the person that cleans the restroom cleans all three of them. The main restroom with showers takes a lot longer than one with a toilet. So they're going to have to say, okay, I spent a half hour cleaning showers, but I only spent 5 minutes. It's just...
I think most people can divide by three.
That wouldn't be fair.
Yeah.
Because they're going to spend more than a third of their time.
Why are you being a nitpicker here?
Send the pot to the kettle.
You know, I'm not asking for detail. I'm asking for big picture. Mm-hmm. And now you're driving and saying, well, I got to think every time somebody marks a tire on a car that's from a fisherman, well, maybe we've got to deal with that, because I think maybe that could become our business. But I believe the launch ramp is, but when we resurfaced the paving, I kind of got into this when we redid the paving, you know, and a lot goes on there. And then we got a wastewater collecting facility for washing boats. We're going to have expenses associated with that. So I really believe that's a separate function from a recreational slip. I do. And I don't think we should break out the fuel sales. You know, if you want to be nitpicky, you want the fuel sales separate. But we can just include that. But the launch ramp, I feel, should be separate. And I'm down there a lot. And I'm seeing who uses the toilets. And I would say the public use of the center toilet is very pervasive. It's a public service. We don't lock it up at night. And, you know, I go to the launch ramp thing. I just see a lot of activity there.
Yeah.
A lot of
I just use whichever one's closest.
To what?
To me.
Which is probably everybody that goes to the concerts in the Cove and the farmer's market.
Yeah.
You know, and comes to the Christmas lights.
Unless you're on ADOC.
But you locked that one up at night, so.
No, I just, I think I'm picking up on what I perceive as Jim's insight in that, is that having to track the amount of time they spend cleaning each restroom is going to take more time than it's worth when you balance it against the data we get from it. I'm not against looking at the launch ramp as a separate category, but I'm not sure that tracking the bathroom use related to the launch ramp, the cost benefit of that is in the, you know, ways to the benefit side.
I appeal to the attorney. This man is reiterating the argument that has already been discussed. You just divide the total charges by three instead of trying to track every minute. So I don't get why you want to track every minute to do this.
Okay.
I'm just talking about the usage. Who uses it, you know?
If the employee spends 45 minutes cleaning the bathrooms, and he cleans all three in 45 minutes, and he spends 40 minutes in one bathroom and 2.5 minutes in each of the other bathrooms, dividing by three gives you a false picture.
That's too nitpicky, because if you keep a bathroom open all night and you've got some bad things that happen in that bathroom because it's open all night, then that takes you a long time to clean up. So the time you're going to spend in each bathroom may differ. We can put a coin box on the bathroom if we want to, you know, if we want to collect that.
I tell you what, I think it's a management issue to decide how they break that out. And once they've reported the information to us, we can ask them to put a finer point on it if we feel it's necessary.
I disagree. I think this is information we're going to use to make decisions, and it should satisfy the information needs that we have to make the policy decisions that we're going to get from this data.
You and I disagree, Walt.
We do.
That's
but we still love each other. So, I would like staff to think about that.
We can do that.
Get back to us.
I think there's some value in thinking about it, given that if we decide 6 months from now that we'd like to have it, we won't have it. And if it has value, I trust that you'll figure that out, take it into consideration, all this.
Not to belabor the point, and I don't want to get nitpicky, but I will. We have two very distinctly different marinas. We have a guest marina and we have a liveaboard marina, and we're lumping them all into one. So if we're going to be using this as a valuable tool, then we need to split guest docks versus the permanent docks, because we won't be able to make those decisions.
Do you want to do that?
No. I'm just
then
saying.
Then why are you promoting?
I'm just saying that's another thing that's going to come into play, that this is going to be an imperfect data we collect.
No one's asking for you to track that separately. I think if
yeah.
I would, you know, so. I think that's just bullshit. So let me just say that for the record. Let's just knock this off. That's a bunch of crap that we'd ever separate guest moorage from that. No marinas do that. Do you do that in Port Townsend? If you really want to do it, fine. But I can see a real case for launch ramps get RCO money from different funding sources. They get fishing tax money. And I think it needs to be treated as a business unit. Hey, look, just go down there and see the commercial activity. I think that's the future. Count the gill netters that were there this week. You know, this is a business unit. That's
a lot
decidedly
of them were
different.
Tied up on the transient dock.
The gill netters. I saw them on trailers.
They rent this place. Almost all of our transients are full of gill netters right now.
Yeah. So.
No problem. We can do it well.
Okay. I don't throw in a towel. Either. And I hold my head up high. Not to be cowed by a clever
wrong.
Lawyer.
Even when you're wrong, you hold your head up high. I'll give you that.
Okay, one last thing. Oh, are we done with this discussion?
I hope so.
Yeah, I think so.
I will. Please, please.
So this is just the covered moorage up to date. What we spent.
Mm-hmm.
And so I transferred money from the Marina Rehabilitation Fund to the Marina General Fund to compensate the amount we spent.
When you look at our financials, you'll see that our total equity is less than it was last month. It's because we transferred $18,000 to cover capital projects from that reserve fund.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And for now, I'm going to do it every other month until we start rolling along in January or February.
So, Juanita, when you say money will continue to transfer, it's all one direction, though.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. And that's all I have to report.
I don't have a lot to report. I have some really exciting stuff to report. Our interim public records officer, Beth Bryant, is amazing, and she's been working really hard, and she has got us down to, we're at 3 open public records requests, a total of 3. So it's an amazing accomplishment, and she deserves accolades. Like crazy, it's amazing what she's done. So we're working on those, and we're in the final stages of responding to those requests and closing those as well. And I will be attending WAPRO next week, next Thursday the 3rd, for training and additional certification. So that's all I have.
You're not going to talk about the staff appreciation?
Oh, I haven't even begun to plan it yet. I mean, there's so many things.
But do we have a date saved, so the commissioners?
I did discuss that with her. You know, was trying to get a feel for her exit date. At this time, she would prefer any appreciation be given at the employee recognition party in December. So she still plans on attending that. I'm going to continue to fish for an actual exit date so we can do a little something for her in the office as well.
Do we know when the employee recognition party is?
Do we
It's a Tuesday, Colonel 20.
Carolyn, you should come. St. Paul's book, it's going to be great.
20th. December 20th, on Tuesday at 6:30.
6:30,
yes.
Anything else?
No, not as well.
Are you getting certified, proper?
I will be receiving some certifications. Right now, it really is, you know, public records 101. It's
okay.
It's getting some of those basic accomplishments taken care of, and then I can do continued training and certifications throughout the year in 2017.
Do I get to talk again?
Sure.
Just want to make sure you're not mad at me.
Oh, I'm just disappointed.
So, two important things. We've got two commission meetings scheduled. Well, we've got a bunch of meetings scheduled, but you all know the meeting on the 4th is with Heartland.
Yes.
Sam has negotiated a really good deal for us to be in a small room here. I think it can be great to have a small conference room here instead of beyond the room. So we're going to move that meeting here, 10 o'clock
Yay.
On the 4th.
Public may show up.
Great.
10 o'clock, you said?
Okay. They're probably here about 10:15, but I'm going to be here at 10.
That's the 9th.
They're bringing them on the 4th.
So that's?
That's the Heartland meeting.
Yeah, so that's not on this
That's not
list,
on this
so
list,
that's
right. The question I have for you is twofold. One, I don't have a need at this point for a special meeting on the 9th. There's nothing on my agenda. Is there something on your agenda that we want to have that?
That's pretty close to the previous meeting.
And then the second point is on Wednesday the 16th, we've scheduled our regular meeting. We're all going to be in Tacoma. So, for the WPPA. So, Juanita, you suggested, is it the 22nd, Tuesday the 22nd, for that regular meeting, if that would work? We didn't want to have it on Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving.
Right.
So.
Right.
I think that works for me. Yeah, because people sometimes want to get out of town for Thanksgiving.
If you could let Sam know if you're available on the 24th, we'll just schedule a regular meeting, or 22nd.
22nd.
I'm available.
Yeah, I'm available.
Okay.
So call us.
We have a long list of things you want to do in these special meetings. Is there any one of those? Maybe it's too early to say before we cancel out on the 9th. Is there anything of that on that laundry list that we've made up for this year that we can? Because I don't know if you know that. You should probably have the list. Yeah.
One of the things that the Monday meetings have kind of superseded, special meetings is great if we need a decision made. But with our weekly Monday meetings, a lot of this dialogue that we can have can happen without a decision. So that's why I was thinking we could replace that unless there's a dire need for getting something approved.
Sure. That's the only problem. If we want to approve something, we have to announce it. So we could always use the Monday meeting as a special meeting if you knew of something that needed an approval.
Is there any, we're meeting with Heartland earlier, is there anything that we need to be prepared to approve?
Okay. They've already had their contract.
Yeah, okay.
We just have a scope of work.
I would like Heartland to prepare the agenda for that meeting. Get the information that they want from us to pursue their contract, and then we can talk afterwards, but for them to take the lead on what the discussions is that?
I've already told them.
Yeah.
They're driving this meeting. Mm-hmm. Come to us with an agenda.
So at this point, are we wiping out November 9th?
Yeah, I don't see any need for
it.
I don't see a need for it.
What we're saying is we can, Jim, I think what I had, we can do things on the Monday meetings.
Great.
And if we see something on the horizon that needs a decision, that could be announced on the Monday meeting thing.
24 hours.
Yeah. But if you see
it would be Thursday or Friday before. And then the 22nd will be our regular meeting.
It'd be a special.
It'll It will be a special meeting because we're moving the day.
So we cancel the regular meeting.
So we're canceling the 16th, adding the 22nd. We still have the 21st in the morning, and we're making the 9th go away.
So we need to make sure we announce that well ahead of time, that our regular meeting is now a special meeting, which means we've got to list everything that we're going to do.
That you're going to take final action on. Yeah.
Yeah, so unlike our normal regular meetings, the agenda needs to be very clear on what in the announcement, what we're going to.
That's true. And you have it till close of business Monday because your meeting starts on Tuesday at 7.
So the announcement has to be the agenda.
Yeah, your agenda just needs to be posted 24 hours, as Sam does regularly.
Keep us on the straight and narrow. Out of the
Are we meeting the Monday, the 28th? I didn't see that on the list.
I don't have to be here. I'm going to be in Oregon. So.
What month?
You guys can meet.
What month? 20.
November.
Monday, November 28th.
A beautiful beach house rented. Can't wait. Grandkids and beach house.
That's the Monday
Sounds
after
good.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I'm happy to not have it happen.
Things are kind of winding down.
Yeah. Unless
process.
Something comes up, I
because then the
know.
Next we do it all the way, you know, for 3 weeks in December. Okay.
And staff will prepare a calendar of events that will include those meetings for the month of November to be delivered to the commission by the end of the week.
Okay.
Any more comments from our esteemed staff?
Public comments, maybe.
Any public comments?
No, I don't really have
any. You are?
I'll keep it as real as short as I can after listening to what you all said. I haven't been to a poetry in a while. My name's Tom Bagley. I got a slip in Kingston 10 years ago. I became a live aboard 3 years ago, so I know a lot about what's going on in the port. And I got caught up on all my crap that went on a couple of years ago. I do have some comments on parking. The parking up towards the office in EDOC, or anybody that's a live aboard or has a boat on EDOC, where it happened to park, but just about the far end of the parking lot most of the time. Last night, there was 6 temporary parking permits parked there from the fishermen that go out on the boats for a month at a time. The rest of them were people who apparently have permits, but they catch the ferry every day. So every weekday, those of us that live on our boats on E-Dock, we're on a guest dock now, but we're having to park elsewhere because it's the same people are parked there all the time. You cut the parking spaces down for permits 2 years ago, and it's slowly been getting worse and worse. The lip-aboard, this whole area, we bought a bigger boat in March. It's too big for our slip. We started looking for slips elsewhere and here. There is no liveaboards in this area. We checked Port Townsend, Port Angeles, Bremerton, all 3 of the marinas in Powellsville, Port Orchard, Port Tacoma, all the way up to Bellingham, and we're on as soon as anybody can get to us is a year. The state limits, I forget what it is, I think it's 5%, 3% the living board. So there's a shortage of living board slips statewide right now that I know. So that's going to become a problem. There's only, I think there's three living boards on BDUC right now. There's us on the guest dock, and there probably will be more as the winter comes on. There's one on DDoc, I think one or two on B or C dock. So there isn't that many liveaboards in Kingston right now. I'm glad to see you're implementing keypads on the gates, because everybody at some point has either lost or forgotten their card. When we were in peak divorce slip at the bottom of the ramp at on EDUC, and we were on the outside of the gate. If I backed up, everybody would just, if they didn't have their cards, they just walked down the back of my boat, walked across the swim platform, and stepped on EDUC. So we became a kind of a transient of we had people walking, coming up to our boat, reaching in through the windows of our boat and petting our dogs. The first month we had the boat, we had somebody come on the boat while we were gone and took a roll of toilet paper, wadded it all up and put it on the countertop. Why, I don't know. Security here at night is non-existent. My wife was attacked a year and a half ago. We're just now at this point going to court over it. Finally arrested the guy. They're having a preliminary court hearing the second of next month, and it goes to court in December. Your guest dock, there's been numerous problems. There was just a drunk that ran into the dock three or four times. The last security guard that was here was years ago, which happens to be Art, who was one of the liveaboards down here. And he quit his job because he was shot at by one of the people at the guest house. So I don't know what's going on. It's the problems that went on for the past few years have pretty much died down. My truck at one point got vandalized regularly. My boat was vandalized regularly. We were threatened regularly, and that seems all pretty much gone away. The other thing, as a liveaboard, is pump outs would be nice. I'm on the guest dock now, which is real nice, because I don't even have to leave my slip. They come down and pump my boat out. Most of the harbors, marinas, and ports we looked at, they all have portable pump outs, every one of them. I don't think I've been to one that doesn't. And those that don't are getting it shortly. The docks down there, that's the other thing I noticed, the docks are dirty. They get cleaned once a year. I paid thousands of dollars vet bills because of my dogs walking to the seagulls, otter, and seal crap that's all over the docks. The other marinas I've gone to, they have somebody walk the dogs once or twice a day. They just have a little brush, they dip them in salt water, and clean it up. The derelict boats, I did walk the dogs with Ray at night of that storm. That's real common in all of the marinas. There's boats that have, I've been here 10 years, I've seen boats that haven't moved in 10 years. The first meeting I went to, Tom Coltis looked at me and said, "Who are you and why are you here?" I said, "I just got a boat here." And they brought up the derelict boats back then, and they didn't really care because as long as they were paying their mortgage and it didn't damage somebody else's boat. But what I brought up was you have a 10 to 15 year waiting list for people that want to use their boats and can't because these people that have the boats here and never use them, they don't buy gas from you guys, they don't use any of the local businesses. Why they pay that kind of money for a mortgage and insurance, I haven't understood. It's been a while since I've read your rules and regulations, but there's got to be something in there that the boats have to be mechanically sound and they have to be safe. Since I complained to Tom Colfus, they went through and cleaned out a bunch of them. I noticed that you have been doing that lately here. That just, you know, little things like that, that just, I'd just like to see cleaned up in the park. The rest of it's real nice. We enjoy the park. We have two dogs. We love it here. Unfortunately, we bought a boat too big for our slip, and so we got to come up with something else. Right now, we don't have many options.
Any questions for Tom?
No, I appreciate your observations. I'm curious, Hulsbo has been wrestling with expanding their liveaboard process, you know, or capability for the last couple of years. Has that opened up any, or is that still?
They could probably get us there one or more, but we'd rather stay here to get this better price. Your prices are lower than just about everybody else, but some of the others are coming down and yours are going up. So, because I could get a 50-foot slip in Hulsbo Liberty Bay for $317 a month, but they're full of liveaboards. That's a big problem right now is liveaboards. They kicked them out of Lake Washington and they're trying to drag them out of Lake Union.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all coming over here.
Is there a special per foot rate for liveaboards, or is it just a liveaboard fee on top of the rate?
Some
there?
Don't charge, and some do.
St. Paul's Bow, where you said.
Liberty Bay didn't say anything about liveaboard rate.
Okay.
Extra rate. Now, my son had a sailboat on Lake Union, and they doubled his rate for liveaboard. I went from 3-something up to 6-something, and that's why I just moved his boat from there over to Paul's boat. He's not a liveaboard anymore. He's up in Alaska, but
I think we went talk about this last year that our liveaboard fees were way low, mm-hmm. and then we doubled them, but we don't know whether I think we're still considerably below some of the other marinas against
that. Some charge and some don't. The big problem, like I said, is just getting a liveaboard.
Does our winter more people overwintering over count against our quota?
We're allowed 10 permanent liveaboards and 11, I think.
Plus
5%.
Plus winter.
Plus winter.
Yeah.
Say that again, Jim, please.
Excuse me?
Would you say that again?
5% of our marina, which is 11 liveaboard spots, we're allowed.
Okay.
Full-time liveaboards.
Plus winter mortgage.
Yes, I'm a little concerned about hearing about crime or vandalism and such, and I don't know if we track that, but it's certainly something we should be aware of or have some way of knowing what's happening because we make decisions on cameras and stuff like that. We should be more encourage our tenants to let us know when things are happening. And,
well, Tom's been really good about that. Both you and your wife really let us know what's happening. We appreciate that.
Yeah. Theft is almost non-existent. There has been vandalism. The raised flowers get tore up. It's just stuff like that.
Well, we did have a guard at one point here, and I don't know if that's an expensive thing to do.
Yeah, I know that's been talked about at all ports meetings a couple of times, the different approaches that the other marinas have taken to trying to do night watchman or guard or someone who comes in, you know, not full-time there, but will do two or three marinas. I recall a couple of them were sharing protective service, and it's not cheap. And if it's something that we need to do, then we should do it, and we'll just have to figure out how to pay for it.
But the other thing, and it's not so bad right now because I guess I pull up the commercial fishermen and they seem to be staying there. I know before they know when the staff is here, and the staff leaves, they come and park their boats on the guest dock, and then they leave before the staff gets back here. So you're losing income revenue there.
Nancy was really good at that. She'd go knock on their boat because she was right there.
You have a pretty hefty fee for doing that in the schedule.
I don't know if you have a camera down there, and it might be cheaper to put a camera down there than have somebody watching it all night.
Ray and I talked about some kind of security staffing. The issue is, we came up with, there's really no support in Kingston. I would not encourage a security guard to approach someone. It'd be more for eyes and ears to call the sheriff, but it could take 3 hours to get a sheriff here in the middle of the night. So it's not like we have a police department or anything. They come from Bremerton as an issue.
One of the marinas, maybe was it Brownsville, used a marina host process, and that person would, if somebody pulled in late at night, would go down and say, "Hi, welcome to the porch. Here's your that'll be $20 or whatever the rate."
That is right. It's Terry.
Is that Terry?
Yes.
Terry.
Well, it's our reporter.
The Terry Ward's.
Carry all the recorded results.
A number they can call after hours if they see something that they should be reporting to us.
We have not instituted that.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, sure. I don't mind.
Well, I think camera would be the best thing because then it's recorded.
Well,
and you don't put somebody in danger because there is people that come in here at night and they can be kind of bothered.
We get calls probably several times a week when the security alarm system goes off here, and we've got to resolve it. Doesn't mean we send volunteers into the building to check it out, but to know what's going on. And when they talked about cameras, great flood. Check those lines, Jim. When they talked about cameras at these meetings, they said one real value is having remote monitoring. So that if you get a report or you hear something happening, you can look at the cameras and then decide what gets done by whom or is this not a problem. Typically, those are people like Shilshaw and places like that. They got a lot more money. But remote monitoring, and then you can check. Someone reports something, you can at least see is this a problem or not.
So submission approved, $25,000 for cameras. We're in the bidding process right now for 30 cameras. That system will be available to Ray, Steve, and myself via our smartphones. So if somebody had a problem, I could actually look at my phone or my iPad and see those cameras and be able to go on the network. It'll be password protected, so it's not an open network. But I think that might help. Able to see something. But like you said, it's normally at night when you can't really see anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so that sounds like we don't really have too much action for you. Okay. Anything else for the good of the order? I apologize, Jim. I didn't mean to give you a long time. And Bruce, you're a lawyer.
I'll take that in the spirit in which it was meant. I'll take that in the spirit in which it was meant.
You've got a thick skin, ready wit, and you bounce back. Okay, is there anything else to cover? Any other comments?
We're looking for a movement to adjourn.
Yes.
A motion.
Put bells on.
So moved.
I'll second.
All in favor.
All right.
Thanks.